What's going on, swingers? Welcome to this week's episode of the Big Swing Podcast. We got my Blue Jay teammate, Kevin Biggio, on the podcast for a second time, touching on Vlad Jr. and how he's feeling coming off the IL. We also touch on the mechanical changes I've made as of late in the big leagues, as well as our top three sounds in all of sports, a random top three that we threw in there this week. So don't miss all that and more on this week's episode of the Big Swing Podcast.
Throwing cheese on the Big Swing Podcast with Blue Jays pitcher Ross Stripling and co-host Cooper Searles.
What's going on, swingers? Welcome to another episode of the Big Swing Podcast. As always, we are brought to you by betonline.ag. Guys, I love to throw down some bets, and it is playoff time in a lot of sports. Baseball is in full swing, so join me, throw down some bets, have some fun, and BetOnline is the best place to go do that. You can look at live odds. You can look at scores, news. It is by far the best place and the easiest way, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That is 50% back on your money. That is free money, swingers. So BetOnline, check them out, your online sportsbook experts. I am Cooper Searles, your co-host, joined as always by my podcast compadre, Ross Stripling. What's going on, bud?
Coop, what's up, dude? Thanks for holding down the fort last week. Good to be back. We got a lot of stuff going on. We got playoff hockey. We got playoff basketball. We're getting into basically neither on this podcast, but just so you know, they are going on. But yeah, man, good to be back.
Yeah, so I kind of been to spring this on you. We didn't talk about this, but it kind of hit me when we first started the podcast. You know, we've had a few incidents in the NBA with fans, you know, kind of doing stuff to some of the players. And I figured we should just at least touch on it a little bit. You know, Kyrie Irving got a water bottle thrown at him. And, you know, that guy, I tweeted this, the guy is a scumbag. He, you know, should deserve to get banned from, you know, going to games for the rest of his life. But, like, also he's being charged with battery with a dangerous weapon. And so I think, you know, like a lot of things, we're swinging way too far the other way. But I don't even have to get into that. I think I'm curious for you, you know, verbally, I'm sure you've heard tons of stuff, but have you ever had anything like physical happen to you with a fan?
Not to me personally. No, I've seen it to a coach in Philly where a fan got fired up and threw something at a coach, you know, but really, no, I've not seen many things. There's plenty of heckles and things like that that go on, but I've really hardly ever seen a fan cross the line like what we've seen in the NBA so far in the postseason. And agreed, I mean, that guy doesn't deserve to go to jail for assault with a deadly weapon or whatever they called it, you know, but he's a punk that threw something at a player, and that can't happen. And you got the best players in the NBA speaking up saying that it's unacceptable. So obviously that guy is going to get punished, and also the stuff in Utah, like those guys deserve to never be able to see a game in those arenas ever again. And, you know, but as far as in the baseball world, luckily I have not seen many things like that.
Man, we're both huge sports fans. Like I love going to arenas or whatever, but I just don't understand the psychology behind getting it to that level. Like, yeah, you know, you can be upset, you can, you know, root for your team, do all that type of stuff, but I will never understand, you know, the psychology behind someone that brings it to that point and treats someone like they're, you know, an animal out there. It is pretty amazing, you know, and you see it anytime you go to a stadium. The stuff that people say is just it can cross the line for sure.
There's some built up anger and, you know, whatever in there from people that haven't been able to attend sports games, been able to get into arenas and stadiums, you know, so that I'd like to think that played into it probably a little more than normal. And we'll get back to the norm after these kind of things where people are getting back into stadiums and being fans again. And that those kind of things aren't happening.
Definitely. Well, let's check in with you, man. You, since we last had you on the pod, I guess 2 weeks ago was the last time. And, you know, you've had two really good outings. You came into a game. It wasn't a start, but you came in after the first inning and ended up pitching seven innings, I think. And then you had another great start of five innings. And I think you only gave up two runs and combined in those two games. So
like you're sort of on the right track.
Yeah. So, you know, just to get into it, and I apologize if you've listened to my post-game interviews, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I'm just going to kind of go through it again for those that haven't. I'm kind of going through a renaissance of sorts right now with mechanics, and I'm kind of mad at myself and mad at former coaches who haven't pointed this out to me in the last 10 years of pitching between college, minor leagues, and now professional big league baseball. And that's how much I moved my hands during my delivery. And I tried to think of a metaphor that you would understand, Cooper, just for fun. And what I came up with is I've been shooting like Sean Marion my whole career. So not necessarily like as odd to the eyeball test as what Sean Marion's shot was, but more like you can make it your own. It's unique. You can probably go have a successful career doing it that way. But when you look around at your peers and the elite players in the game, I was definitely doing it different than what those guys were doing or are doing. And that's just how much I moved my hands and my delivery. So I started looking at the best guys in the game, DeGrom, Verlander, Kershaw, Gerrit Cole, among others. And you see that there's very little hand movement when they go to deliver the pitch. They put their hands where they want them. And when they're starting to go down the slope, their hands are exactly where they want to be every single time. So you're getting the ball out of the glove at a very consistent time and place every single time you're delivering a pitch. And the one that I found the best was Adam Wainwright. I mean, he literally just puts his glove on his belt, puts the ball in there, gets his grip, and as he goes to deliver the pitch, his glove doesn't move. So his timing's good, his deception's good. And I was having a hard time with tipping pitches because I was going up to like the bill of my cap on some pitches, like my curveball. On other pitches, I was only going up to like my chin. You can't give major league hitters that kind of advantage where I'm basically tipping what's coming before I release the pitch. I mean, man, these are the best guys in the world. You can't do it. But the biggest thing really, I think, is timing. If I'm going up to a different position every time I go to deliver a pitch, and it's also different between the windup, which I recently implemented again, and the stretch where I was really inconsistent. Now you're talking about getting the ball out of my glove at a very different time every single pitch, like very little consistency. So my misses were big. And as we saw, when I missed big, they were getting hammered. I was giving up homers. I was giving up damage. So now, you know, long story short, my glove is in the same spot. So when I go to deliver, my timing's the same on every single pitch. It doesn't move, so I'm not tipping any pitches. And what I've seen so far is, one, I think I'm more deceptive, and my misses are smaller. When I miss, it's usually to the side I'm trying to miss. It's not leaking back over the plate. I'm not hanging breaking balls, you know, and I think I've got hitters more off balance than what we've seen going back even to like last year when I got traded over and struggled into this year where I still struggle. I mean, I just got my first win as a Blue Jay, and I've, you know, made 10-plus appearances at least. So it's just been frustrating, man. But now after two good outings, you know, feel like I'm starting to get confident, which is the biggest thing, man. You got to pitch with confidence and conviction. If you're out there thinking you're going to fail before you get out there, you got no chance at this level. I mean, you literally have no chance. So now that I feel like I can maybe roll off a couple good outings and, you know, have a better chance for success, better chance to help the team win in a much better spot physically and mentally. So yeah, that's kind of just the biggest difference between even just the last time I was on this podcast, if you want to give it a time frame. I mean, it was a huge change mechanically. May not sound like it, but it was. And I've had good results, so keep it rolling.
The one thing I'm curious about, you know, this is a podcast, so we can't get visual, unfortunately, but, you know, when I'm thinking about you moving that glove up and down based on the pitches, like, it obviously wasn't an unconscious thing, but do you think that there was a reason maybe you moved that glove higher on a curveball, like to position your arm differently, or, you know, that was what that was about, more positioning thing?
Yeah, I think that's exactly how it starts, is you get comfortable delivering a changeup where I don't bring it all the way up. I bring it up more to my chin, and then I get the ball. I've always wanted to get the ball out of my glove sooner on a changeup. So then I think I don't let it get as high as like I do on my curveball because I want to get the ball out. Versus my curveball, I think I want to have that grip, and I grip it really hard. So as I'm moving my glove up, I'm like kind of pounding the ball into my glove so I really get a grip in it as hard as I possibly can. So I think I want that extra second to really just like get in there and grind, get that grip, and then rip it out. And I think just that fraction of a second, the glove goes from basically chin high to all the way above the bill of my cap.
That's interesting because, you know, you mentioned, you know, obviously the tipping thing is a huge deal, and you actually had some struggles with that a couple years ago. Like, was that not brought up, or was that not noticed? Like, I know that there were some other tweaks you made, I think, on your foot positioning, but was that not noticed that your glove is clearly in a different position pitch to pitch?
You know, it kind of comes down team to team. In LA, we had a guy who, and we also had Chase Utley for a long time, but we also had a guy who looked for that kind of stuff specifically, like it was part of his job description. To my knowledge, the Blue Jays don't have that. So you're talking about it being on myself and our pitching coaches to find that kind of stuff on top of the already giant workload that they have. I mean, it's a hard, you know, some of these things are tiny,
you can't not
really
see
hard
it
to
anymore.
Pick up. But
yeah,
once you pick it up, it's so blatant. But yeah, we did have an idea that it was going on. You can kind of see some things, which is why I originally brought the windup back, was for one, to get my feet moving, get a little momentum going, but two, we thought it would alleviate tipping out of the stretch because I was really tipping out of the stretch. And if anything, it made things worse. It was more moving parts and more things to tip. So it actually kind of heightened the problem and made it like obvious that, okay, we need to make an adjustment.
Well, that's awesome, dude. I mean, I'm sure it's, you know, it's not a foolproof thing, and you probably will revert back to that at, on a pitch-to-pitch basis, maybe a little bit, but at least to know now, like, what's going on, because you've been frustrated knowing, like, hey, I feel good. I'm throwing the same stuff that I typically do. Like, what's going on here? And so I bet that's just, like, a liberating feeling to know, like, that, hey, at least we've determined maybe what the cause of some of the struggles were, and it's clearly, like, you know, worked. In the short term, it's clearly worked. So I'm happy to see that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's same. And pumped it happened. Just wish it happened about this time last year.
Yeah. All right, Twingers, we haven't done this in a while, but we're going to do a top three. And this is one that we've been kind of circling for a long time, but we're going to do top three sports sounds. So Strip, I'll let you go first and then I'll follow you. So what is your number three sound?
My number three sound, and I think it was Mark Cuban that did it, it's putting the microphone in the net in basketball games. And I just remember it when I was young, going to see Dirk Nowitzki play, and he would, like, swoosh one of those where he, like, kicks the guy in the balls and he shoots at the same time. And it would swoosh, and it makes that, like, little splash sound. Whoever put the microphone in the net, I think, is just such a, like, even think, like, when Carmelo Anthony would shoot and he would, like, swoosh it more than someone else normally swooshed it. Like, his swooshes were sexy. And it would make that sound. And you're like, dude, that was a sick shot. Like, it just amplified the shot, made it sound and look so much cooler.
It's one of those things that, like, imagine watching the game without that microphone now. Like, without that sound, it would be super weird. No, I'm on board with that one. My first one is a sport that I've really gotten into lately, and that's snowboarding. And this can kind of be skiing too. And I just loved, like, the sound of cutting in the snow. There's, like, a ASMR feeling for me, like, when I hear that sound, like, I just love it. And it's sort of repetitive when you're out there, kind of a rhythm to it as you're skiing and snowboarding. So I'm going to go with, like, cutting through the snow in a snowboard.
My guess is ours are going to be totally different, because you're thinking more, like, personally, like, when you're on the field. Oh, I'm thinking, I think, more as a fan.
Even better. Yeah. Even better.
All right, so my second one, just to rattle it off real quick, I did, like, the funny sound that you make when you're in the section that's doing the wave. You know, so, like, the wave is coming at you. You, like, crank your neck to the right. You see it coming, and then you stand up and you make an only sound that you make if you're doing the wave. It's like a woo-hoo kind of sound. Yeah. You know, like, you never make it any other part of life besides the wave. And then it just passes you by. You got a half second, and then you just hope it makes it way back to you. And I don't know. As players, I don't like the wave. I think it's distracting. I think it's, you know. But as a fan, I want there to be a wave if I'm sitting in the stands at some point, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, whatever. I need a wave.
Yeah, you're so right. Like, who decided that was the audible sound that we make?
Yeah.
Like, during the wave. But you're so right. I have never not done the wave and not made that sound.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, what's your second?
Good call. So, yeah, you're right. We're doing this totally different, which is good, because we're going to get, like, six different answers here. So my second one is just got to be the sound. And this kind of goes for watching at home as well, but the sound of, like, a flushly hit iron.
Ooh.
That just sound is just, like, so pure. And it's one of those feelings when you're playing golf that, like, when it makes that sound and has that feeling, you just know immediately it's going to be a good shot. And it's just, like, not only does it sound good, but, like, the result's probably going to be good if it sounds that way, because you hit it flush on the face of the club. So I'm going to go, yeah, that sound coming off a flush iron shot.
I don't know that sound besides for maybe, like, a couple times in my entire life. I am such a bad iron player. It's not even funny.
No one's good. Everyone
sucks. But I've heard it from, like, team, like, Joe Kelly was, he played these blades, and he would hit an iron, and he'd hit a 7-iron, like, as far as I'd hit a 3-wood. And I'd be like, dude, that was the coolest thing I've ever seen. And man, when you're good at golf, it's just something. It's something else.
When you see it and you hear it live, it's just like, oh man, that's the best. I just wish I could do that. But all right, what's your third?
So it's my number one, and I didn't want to overthink it. It's the crack of the bat. I mean, you said it even in the text when we were talking about this segment. Like, it's the crack of a wood bat. Like, when I was a kid going to watch the Rangers early BP and Ken Griffey Jr.'s hitting BP, like, it just sounds different off certain guys' bats. Vladdy Jr., big part of this podcast today and past podcasts, like, it sounds different when it comes off his bat. And as a kid, you're playing with metal bats, you're hearing the ting, 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 and then you go to a big league game and you hear a wood bat, the crack of a wood bat, and it just means professional baseball, big league baseball, and it's just an awesome thing to hear, very unique to big league baseball. There's nothing else like it in sports. So I didn't want to overthink it. It's the crack of a bat is my number one sport in baseball by far.
Yeah, that's an incredible sound. I love how unique it is to the sport too, like you said. So my number one overall sound, and like, you know the feeling when you hear a sound or a song and you can like put yourself back in that moment, like you can feel like the feelings you feel when you hear that sound.
Yep.
And that sound for me is just like the cleats on concrete.
Nice.
And I get this feeling of like nerves almost when I hear that sound, because it reminds me of like walking out to the field of Little League Baseball or a football game, and you're walking out, you know, about to run through the tunnel, or even like golf, like you hear the spikes on the concrete walking into the clubhouse. Like there is a feeling where it's like, all right, it's go time. This is game time. And every time I hear that sound, like I remember hearing it a couple times at spring training. That was like the last time I heard it. And it was just like, all right, it's go time.
That's what it is for me, man. It's spring training, because it's never you by yourself. It's like 50 of us. And we're just like walking right out of the locker room, down the cement, you know, down the cement, why can't I think of what it's called?
Sidewalk.
Down, yeah. Walking out of the locker room, down the cement sidewalk, and there's 50 of us, and we're going to practice. You know, it's 7:30 in the morning, and it's going to be a good day. Yeah, that's an awesome sound. I don't know how I didn't think of that one. That's an incredible sound.
Yeah, that's just the feeling I get, like, of being back in Little League or something, and I can almost smell what it smelled like at the stadium, and, like, hear, you know, the sound of the metal bat, but like that one sound brings back so many memories for me. So
nostalgia,
yeah, it's got to be my number one.
Nostalgia is a real thing, man. I feel
unbelievable.
Like, yeah, I feel like now that I'm an old man in my 30s, like I get hit with more nostalgia. It's mostly with songs. Like some song will come on a playlist,
for sure,
and it just like triggers a high school or a college memory, and you're just like, man, you know what got me recently was the Friends reunion, because I was I think I was 15 when the finale happened. And I remember watching it and being like emotional when it ended, and then watching the reunion being emotional and being like, man, this show impacted me more than it should have. Like, what the heck? But like being like, man, it just takes me to such a specific part of my life.
Yep. That's The Office for me. It's I can watch that finale over and over and have the same like visceral feeling every single time. So, all right, let's take a quick break and we will get into our interview with Blue Jays stud Kevin Biggio.
All right, guys, welcome back. We are joined for a second time with our man, Kevin Biggio, two-time swinger. Kevin, what's up, dude?
What's up, Ross? How you guys doing?
Good, man, good. So, first question I wrote down, first time on the IL, right? This is?
Yeah.
Most people, when they go on the IL, kind of just stay the same. But then there's people that swing one way or the other. There's people that will take the spa days, right? They'll, like, get massaged during the game, sit in the hot tub for an hour, like, really enjoy the, like, 10 days, you know, take it as spa days. And then there's people like Clayton Kershaw that just, like, eats at him. Like, he just can't handle it. He's so mad. I feel like you're a little bit on that spectrum, first time on the IL. Been a tough 10 days for you?
Yeah, I've been very bored, to say the least. Yeah, going in during the game and getting treatment is... I think the biggest part that's the weirdest for me was not really watching the whole game. Like, as you know, like I go in for treatment for what, 4 or 5 innings. And that's a big chunk of the game. And mine was kind of a weird injury is my spine. So the whole time my face is looking straight down, whether it's through the hole of the table or sometimes just straight into a towel. I can't even watch anything. So that was pretty hard to go through, but you know, I'm feeling better now, and you know, I'm glad all the treatment and all that work that is it's starting to pay off.
One of the more unique in parentheses things you'll see next to you know, Kevin Biggio goes on the 10-day IL with upper cervical neck sprain or something, ligament sprain. Yeah,
dude, I imagine it sucks even more for like you, like a position player versus a pitcher. Like Ross, like, you know, if Ross is on the 10-day, like, you know, it's just 5 days longer than it typically is when he sees the field, you know, if he's starting. Like, you guys are out there literally pretty much every day for 162 days. Like, it's, like, just from a routine standpoint, I'm sure it would drive you a little nuts.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, 162 games is a long time, and the biggest thing with that is getting into a rhythm. And, you know, the 10 days off it definitely puts a halt in that. And you know, looking forward to getting out there again and finding that rhythm and just, you know, overall just want to help the team again. And yeah, the upper ligament, cervical, spine, sprain. I mean, I've got some weird text messages as in like people are really concerned about what that is. And I'm like, oh no, I'm all right. I just need probably just 10 days off, get the inflammation down, and I'll be good to go.
That's one of those injuries as a fan, like, and I'm not saying this is the case with you, but it's a lot of big words that it sounds like that, oh, maybe he just like is super hungover or he like got punched in the face at a bar or something like that. And they're just using some term to fool us all. But yeah, I'm looking at you right now. Your face is looking clean. So I think that's avoidable for you.
So we got to get into Vladdy a little bit, Gavin, because, I mean, you've been with him since he was a teenager, man, right? Like, to now, when I got here last year, he was doing fine. I mean, it's just the expectations were so high. And then now to come out and kill it. But last year, all you guys that had been with him for so long had been saying, like, yeah, he's going to kill it. He's going to be fine. He's going to come back and kill it. He's going to hit 300 and all, you know, all the stuff that he's now doing. But it was kind of hard to see it at this time last year where you're kind of like, I don't know, you know, sophomore slump. He's obviously a very big man. Like, what's it going to look like as he ages? And then now we're getting to see it firsthand every day, man. Like, what are you seeing out of Vladdy? You know, is this what you knew was coming the whole time? Or is this even like above what you were thinking might happen?
Anything that dude does never surprises me. What everybody's seeing right now is what we've all seen in the minor leagues for years. And yeah, when he debuted, there was tons of pressure, big spotlight, and I can only imagine what it's like to try to live up to those expectations, you know, as a teenager. And I think, you know, you got to give so much credit to him and what he did this offseason is where he sat down and he looked at, you know, himself as his body and what has been limiting him that did it in the minor leagues. And he worked his ass off. He worked out every day. He had a plan, lost a lot of weight, and you know, he got after it. And, you know, what you see from him today is, you know, it's just the start of his legacy, I think. So from a friend standpoint, I'm super proud to see him take off and learn more about what works for him. And, you know, he's continuing to put the work in and it's really, you know, positive to see. And I'm just excited to see what, you know, the rest of the year for him looks like.
I feel like maybe because you guys are in Toronto or whatever it is, you don't hear a ton like about Vladdy, like personally, I feel like it just, maybe he doesn't talk about it that much. You've been with him for tons of years now, like throughout the minor leagues, and you guys have been in probably shitty hotels and buses together and everything. What's something about him, like a hidden skill or a personality trait that people wouldn't know about Vladdy?
He's super easygoing, but I think the thing that stood out to me when I first met him and throughout the course of the minor leagues and even today is that he just, you know, he never really lets the spotlight get too big for him. I mean, I've seen him in the minor leagues where he was on the cover of 3 magazines before he even stepped on a big league diamond, and he never really cared about it. He was like, oh yeah, whatever. Like here's a stack of 30 magazines of Baseball America sitting in everybody's locker room, and it's my face on it for the third consecutive time. But you know, I'm just here to hit the ball 150 miles an hour off the bat every single time I step to the plate. So from that standpoint, it's that always impressed me. In Double A and High A, I feel like every interview I had was either, you know, it was always the questions about my dad, and then it was always about, you know, he was always so humble about, you know, that spotlight and the way he handled it was, you know, really mature for someone who was, he was 19 at the time. So it was very impressive.
We're at a point in baseball where we have these like really young Latin players that are really, really good, right? Between Tatis, Soto, Acuna, who I feel like get a lot more love than Vladdy, even though Vladdy's obviously up and coming and killing it this year. Of those three that I mentioned, Tatis, Acuna, Soto, who is Vladdy the most like of those three to you? Or is he in like a realm of his own? They're actually all four very different players. Because I think those three are very different. And then Vladdy, to me, is kind of like a Soto, but I don't know if he's just in his own echelon as well.
Yeah, I think all four of those guys are all in their own category. But if you want to compare the two of them, I think Vladdy and Soto are the most similar. I mean, just from a pure hitter standpoint, those guys are, I mean, from a pitcher standpoint, those guys are extremely difficult outs just because they don't have really any holes. They cover, you know, all 9 quadrants really well, and they hit balls hard and they don't swing a ball. So from a pitcher standpoint, it's a nightmare, right? And so I think those two, they don't strike out a whole lot either.
Yeah, that's what it is for me, man. It's the approach at such a young age. Like, I'm not convinced that Tatis and Acuna have approach. I just think they're so good that they see the ball, hit the ball, and they can get to things up and in. They can get to sliders down and away, and they can pull them for power. versus Acuna and Vladdy, I feel like have a pretty good plan when they step in the box. They command the zone really well, and that makes them such a tough out. Like Tatis, every now and then you can throw a slider in the other batter's box and he's going to swing at it. I feel like I've never seen Vladdy swing at that in 2 years.
Yeah, the thing with Vlad is one of the first things I noticed is that he doesn't get fooled twice in a bat. So you can throw him your best pitch and he's going to swing and miss on a ball in the dirt, and then they're going to try and throw it three more times and he won't even think about swinging at it. So that was always a thing that impressed me too.
Yeah, it's like that mental bank, that photographic memory where you just kind of store that last pitch and you'll never forget it. But yeah, it's interesting. So let's get into this season a little bit. One thing I'm curious on is, like, you guys went from that 60 game sprint, now you're in a full 162. You know, obviously the 60 games is too little a time, but do you find yourself thinking that baseball in general should adjust to a shorter schedule, or are you like gung-ho about, like, let's keep the 162?
Yeah, I'm as old school as it gets when it comes to changing the game. I don't like seeing the game changed a whole lot. That's just from me watching my dad and listening to him talk about the game for years and years. So everything new that gets put in, I'm usually against it. So, and I think the 162 game schedule is what makes baseball so unique. I mean, the average sports fan can watch a baseball game and never understand why we really get tired. I mean, because we're out in the field from a position player standpoint, we're just standing around for the most part. And, you know, we get a couple ground balls hit a game, maybe, I mean, sometimes zero. But the hard part is just day in and day out, and you really have no time to breathe and get that recovery. So I think that's what makes baseball so difficult in my eyes.
This time last year, we were in the home stretch, man. You know, not this time on the calendar, but this time in the amount of games in the home stretch. Like, what are you doing staring down another 100? Like, you just kind of stay in the course, or are you like actively kind of changing some things up, knowing that, you know, gosh, dude, we're not even like the dog days of summer yet?
Yeah, it's one of those things where you have to constantly remind yourself, hey, it's a long year. I mean, we go through the first 2 weeks and, you know, I really wasn't swinging it that well. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I got to go hit. I got to go do these things. And I'm like, all right, you know, we got 145 more games left. Like, just relax and just go do your thing out there.
Well, yeah, that's why I wonder if you would, like, you know, be struggling with the 10 day as much as you are now if you didn't come off that 60 game sprint. Cause like last year, if you were to get a 10 day, like, that's, you know, could be devastating to a team or your season. But like, now it's just like, all right, dude, relax. You know, you're going to miss like six games like of 162.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we're in Buffalo, man. You ready? I guess by the time this podcast goes out, we'll have played two games in Buffalo.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's almost like a breath of fresh air being here.
Yeah, I thought they did some good job. I thought the renovations looked good just in like my quick walkthrough last night.
Yeah, I did a full workout today, and the infield's way nicer. The locker room, as you saw, was pretty insane, the amount of work that they did. And number one thing, they fixed the showers. I mean, I took a shower today, and it was nice. It's got pristine water pressure. Just wait, and you'll find out.
Can't wait.
Imagine, you know, the worst thing ever is water pressure, lack of water pressure. Yep, that's just the first thing that's going to deter me from any room.
That's in Ted Lasso. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, I got a question for both y'all before we log off. You know, you're in Buffalo now. You got Josh Allen, biggest arm in the league, possibly. Who is the guy you're picking on your team to, you know, chase down one of those 60-yard bombs?
Oh, man. Teo comes to mind for me. Oh, JD's a good
JD,
one.
JD. JD catches everything, dude, bro.
He does.
He's made some incredible plays, and I've seen him run down a lot of things that not many people can run down.
JD, no doubt, on the position player side. On the pitching side, I guess I'm throwing, man.
Yourself?
Well, yeah, I'd love to, but I'm thinking of someone else. I think Matt's is like a sneaky kind of a freak, man. He's like 6'5 and about 3% body fat. I mean, I feel like you could throw him out there and he might have a chance.
Romano, too. Romano is sneaky, probably one of the fastest guys on our team. Like, he's flirting with Teo.
Yeah, great question. Well, Kevin, man, thanks for hopping on for 10 minutes just to talk Blue Jays, Vladdy, how you're feeling, all that, man. Looking forward to seeing you on the field again. Two-time swinger, Kevin Biggio. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
On deck in the Big Swing Podcast, the Beast of the Week with Strip and Coop.
All right, guys, welcome back. Big time thank you to Kevin for hopping on the podcast for a second time. With that, we're going to move into our Beats of the Week segment. Every week, Coop and I like to pick out something on sports, pop culture, something that sticks out to us. We call it our Beats of the Week. So with that, Coop, who's your Beast of the Week?
My Beast of the Week is Luka Doncic. I think he's been a Beast of the Week for maybe you or me in the past. But like, I think people from the outside looking in know how good he is, but they don't really realize like how historically good he is. Like he is, I think he's 21 years old now. He's the best 21-year-old in the history of basketball. And I don't say that lightly. He, in his like first two playoff rounds, he's basically averaging like 35 a game. And to start this playoff series, he's gone 31, 39, 44. And then he had an off game where he was hurt with 19. But what he's doing in the playoffs and how he's like seamlessly walked into this league and been like a complete alpha and one of the top five best guys in this league, it's honestly, it's unprecedented. Like even LeBron, you know, was incredible this early, but not to the level where he's, you know, sort of controlling what happens on the floor like Luka is. So I hope everyone kind of notices what's happening here. And I'm going to say right here, like I will not be at all shocked if we look up in 20 years and he's got 4, 5, 6 titles and he's like considered a top 10, top 5 player ever.
I'm with you. I know that this has happened before because I think I remember saying this exact thing on the podcast. It's saying for him to get to the next level for me, now that I've watched these first, I guess I watched the first 4 games really because they come on late against the Clippers, is he just bitches yep. too much for me. Like he looks wimp, whiny. And he's always talking to the ref. I mean, when he gets in like Patrick Beverley's face, I think that's cool. I got no problem with that. But when he makes such unique, weird, funky shots. And then if they don't go in or if he gets hit a little bit, he just runs over and whines. Yeah. And I think until he, you know, and LeBron did that and still does that. But for whatever reason, Luka just does it even more to me. And that's the next step for me is dude, get over that and just be a boss. And you're a top 3 player.
Yeah, he's not the most likable guy. Like I don't love watching him. Like I appreciate him. He's amazing, but he does have this sense of entitlement. It seems like really, really early on in his career, like, you know, Chris Paul and Tim Duncan, all these guys bitch, but like they earned it. You know, they've been in the league for a long time and they have a little bit of equity with these officials, but yeah, Luka comes off as a little bit whiny and entitled. So I hope he clears that up too, because I want to like him more. You know, I really do.
Yeah.
But all right, Ross, who's your Beast of the Week?
So I went with Brewers pitcher Brandon Woodruff. I mean, between him and Corbin Burns, they're kind of taking the league by storm, but I really wanted to highlight Woodruff in this one. 1.27 ERA through 11 starts, 83 punch outs and 71 innings. He's really been a top tier pitcher for like 2+ years now. I do think Jacob DeGrom is in a kind of his own planet, but I think Woodruff is firmly now in that next echelon of guys with, you know, Garrett Cole, Hyunjin Ryu, Bieber, Bauer, Yu Darvish. Like, he belongs in that echelon when most people probably wouldn't put him there. I mean, he's throwing 98 the whole game. He pitches deep every outing. He gives his team a chance to win every time. He's on a sneaky good Milwaukee team that no one ever talks about. And him and Corbin Burns are as good a 1-2 punch as anyone in the big leagues. He just outdueled Max Scherzer, beat the Nationals, shut him out. You know, so 1.27 ERA through 11 starts. You're my Beast of the Week, Brandon Woodruff.
I think, unfortunately, it's his name. That just sounds like a bullpen name. That sounds like a guy that, like,
does.
A middle reliever that would come on and bridge the gap for guy saving. It.
That's what he looks like. He kind of looks like Jabba Chamberlain.
I think it's. Yeah. I think the
like
name.
Grizzly. Yeah.
I think if he was named, like Scoop Jackson or something, we'd be like, oh, yeah, that guy's awesome. Or Jackson Stripling. Yeah, that's like that's a Texas high school football quarterback's name.
Yeah, I agree. When we named him that, I was like, yeah, he's got Texas high school quarterback. He's going to be a bull rider or a country singer. Like, there's kind of those are three options.
Yeah, I mean, if he's like a accountant, then, you know, that's just going to he's going to be too cool of a name for an accountant, unfortunately. So he's got to be something in the extreme sports.
Change it to Jack.
Yeah, for sure. All right, swingers. Well, thanks for tuning in. Big thanks to betonline.ag for sponsoring the pod again. Greatest place to go place your bets. So please go see them. They have all the odds, scores, news for sports. Keep you up to date with all your bets. So betonline.ag, check them out. You can find us, as always, on Instagram and Twitter. Our handle is @BigSwingPodcast. You can find me @CooperSearles. Strip, where can they find you?
@Ross_Stripling on Instagram, @RossStripling on Twitter.
All right, swingers, we'll see you next week.